Maximise your end of financial year savings with exceptional tax time purchasing opportunities from Mercedes-Benz Berry. Here's four-time Premiership Hawk, Jordan Lewis.
Lewis from 40, low, hard goal!
Jordy Lewis joins us on a Thursday every week, and it's the first time we really turn our attention to the week ahead, although there's plenty of footy topics we want to get to as well. Jordy, welcome.
Good morning, boys. You look nice and cosy down there, Gaz. Beanie on, scarf on.
Yes, well, there's a nice little fresh chill in the air, but it looks like it's going to be a beautiful day. The sun's out, so that's a good thing.
It is.
A weekly question we always give you. You don't have to answer this now. It's a very hard one. It's probably unfair. Scott Pendlebury, Trent Cotchin and Joel Selwood coming to the end of the next 1, 2, 3 years of their great celebrated careers. We want you to rank them.
Easy question.
I've got three boys at home. It's like saying, which one would you prefer to take with you?
No, that's not the question. The question is those three players. Of Scott Pendlebury,
Trent
Cotchin. You got as long as you want to take.
All right, I'll come back. Give me 10 minutes just to look over a few things.
You don't even know this. You haven't been given a heads up on this.
Well, I have, yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, you can never think about it. We might do it after your first bit because there's lots of other stuff kicking around at the moment. I'm interested in your take. I haven't caught up with your view on the Mackay situation. I know you've spoken about it, but I haven't quite got it. So share that with our audience, Mackay and Hunter.
Yeah, I did Fox that night. So we probably had the first look at it, and I suppose that was unique in a way that you could make your own judgment and not be influenced by a lot of the stuff that's happened. And what I said then, and I still believe now, is that when you train pre-season, hours and hours in specific positions, this is a position that you probably train the most because in the game it is nearly the one area where you have to make a split-second decision, and the decision that you make eventually is to protect yourself. So the way that these two boys that I see attacked this contest was, one, David Mackay entering a situation that he's been put in time and time again and knew exactly what to do to contest the ball, to protect the most important part of our body, which is our head. And then you look at Hunter Clark, and unfortunately it was, once again, a split-second decision, but he didn't do the same things that we've been taught over years of training to protect his head but still be able to get the ball. And I understand that people have said, oh, yeah, but Mackay overstepped the ball. That's exactly what you practice. Overstep the ball, turn your body a little bit to protect yourself. In the event that you get the ball, you're able to exit the stoppage as well. So it's not only protecting your head, it's giving you the best chance to get the ball and exit that part of the game.
So you're saying what Mackay did is textbook?
Textbook, absolutely.
And that's what players are currently at AFL club land being taught to do?
Yep.
Exactly, so what he did.
Nearly every single session we would have, if it's 5 minutes, if it's 10 minutes, whatever it may be, on that type of situation. Because the ramifications, if you don't protect yourself, are exactly what happens, unfortunately, to Hunter Clark. You put yourself in a very vulnerable position. And I get that especially AFL players who have the ability to train a day in, day out, we can adapt. But it's the younger kids, how do you teach them? I get that argument. But from an AFL point of view, highly tuned athletes who have practiced this time and time again, that is an instance that Mackay would look at and go, I couldn't have done anything more.
Which goes to the heart, and we talked about this earlier, and I think, as I said, Jared Healy's really concise summation of it was trying to apply tomorrow's answer to an issue to today's incident. And that is, Jared's saying, if the game is saying that we want to get this out, well, legislate for it in the future. You can't apply it retrospectively. And if you're saying that David Mackay has played this way his whole career and never been called up on it, is it fair then to go, that's right, but that the whole circumstances of footy have changed and we're more cognizant of head injury and we don't want this sort of stuff, so you're going to be the sacrificial lamb? I don't know how you can do it in the middle of a season.
No, and I totally agree. And I think it's unfair on the tribunal members to actually have to make a judgment or make a call on something that is not illegal in our game. So the outcome tonight has ramifications, I suppose, for players in which they approach games now. So you think of the two games that are the game that's tomorrow night, Geelong versus Western Bulldogs. They have effectively 24 hours to try and get their head around okay, this is now a four-week suspension, or if it goes the other way, 0 weeks. But you've still got to approach that contest now knowing that you leave yourself open, and players have never had to deal with this type of stuff. I mean, the Sam Wicks one, if you can remember, the Sam Wicks versus Will Day on the weekend.
Yep. Yep.
For me, that is the action that we want totally out of our game.
Yep.
When a player, that front-on contact, I get that. But the McKay one for me is a position where it's quite hard as a player.
And Tootie off our text machine says, well, Jordan, it's time to rewrite the textbook. Okay, that might be, Tootie, that might be where we get to. I hope we don't, but that might be where we get to. But you can't, this is the issue, you can't then make David McKay pay for it now because you want to rewrite something in the future.
I don't agree with that. I still think AFL in particular, I'm talking the elite level, players, as I said, train this day in, day out. They should know when they go to a contest like that to be able to protect themselves from any type of injury. And I know that there will be stuff that happens, and that's just the unlucky part of our game. But for me, that contest right then, you would be surprised how many times in a training session, in a week, in a preseason, that players are put in that position.
Just going back to something that you found yourself in the middle of, and that was when you and Jared Harbrow collided and you're going back with the flight of the ball. Can you now see a time where you may be penalised because you went for the ball that maybe wasn't really your ball?
Well,
and you were careless and reckless in the pursuit of that?
Well, you look at that, right, that specific instance, and I'm trying to, after this McKay instance, go, well, what other parts of our game should players show duty of care? So should Jared Harbrow, in my opinion, he shouldn't have. He was contesting the ball. Should he have shown a duty of care for someone coming back with the flight of the ball? When the greatest part of our game is taking high flying marks. Now, should those players now show duty of care when they're attempting a high mark?
But, and there are people out there that think that this is a ridiculous conversation, but this is a creeping way of thinking in our game, and none of us right now know where this might end up.
No, but so take my instance first. So if at any time a player is going back with the flight of the ball and you're coming the other way, what are you supposed to do if we're talking duty of care? So that's where it can go to.
Did you have a look that day? Did you actually look to see if there was somebody coming or?
No, people say it was brave of me, but I didn't know anyone was there. So,
but you know, I understand that. But do you think now that somebody, should you take a look in that instance and think, well, actually, I'm going to.
Well, Jack did. Jack took a look.
Yeah,
I think in that instance, you're
trusting not only the person that kicked it to you, you're probably trusting the people that are forward of the ball, that if there is someone there, that they're going to protect that person from colliding.
So if Nick Riewoldt, and this was my immediate reaction, if Tim Watson's running out to mark the ball coming at him, like, you know, as a defender, you've got the right on the play, right? And then Nick Riewoldt, as he did at the SCG that day, comes flying in from 35 metres away and gets there a split second after Tim and knocks him out in the process of taking the mark or drops the mark, say. Is he liable?
Yeah, so if tonight goes the way and McKay gets suspended, those types of instances have to come into the same basket. They just have to. Mm. Because if we're serious about protecting the player and protecting the head and players have to show a level of duty of care, it has to come into the conversation.
Can I just check this from Peter? Peter says, the issue is not being discussed and I don't know why. Why did McKay have both feet off the ground when he made contact? Leaving the ground says playing the man, not the ball. Well, Pete, I can only say what I did on Monday. I went back and watched it, you know, in slow motion 100 times. He didn't have both feet off the ground when he made contact. So I'd respectfully dispute what you're saying. He didn't jump in the air to make contact with Hunter Clark. His feet were still on the ground when his shoulder made contact with Hunter.
Yeah, and I'll say it again. I've looked at it and I've, you know, been in the game for however long, and it's trained. So exactly what McKay did is exactly how you train. And I didn't think at any point did he leave the ground like instances that we've seen in the past. That was the perfect way to contest that type of ball.
Well, we have to start changing the language around our game then and what constitutes being brave or not being brave. Is that just now going to be thought in the in the future, will that be thought of as just being stupid to go back with the flight of the ball when you don't have a play in it necessarily?
I think players are now aware of it.
Do you think there's been a shift already?
I think commentators are as well. I think in the past there would have been commentary around a player that would have essentially pulled out of a contest. And we watch a lot of footy and we see it, you know, nearly on a weekly basis that players are making those split-second decisions not to actually go back with the flight of the ball. And I don't think it's a bad thing.
What about once upon a time, if you spotted that in an opposition player, you'd make a point of saying, hang on, mate, you'd pulled out of that. Do you think that conversation has changed on the field too?
I think if you're a player that stands underneath the ball and you drop your head, that would be a green light, I suppose, Tim, to have a conversation with the player. But if a player was coming back with a flight of the ball, I would never sledge them for pulling out of a contest. I would never do that.
And we are being, and I say this again, being more discerning in our commentary around that, particularly a ball in dispute at ground level. If a player there is not going to get there and slows up, we don't sit there going, oh, he's taking a short step. We understand I think in the main we understand that. I don't know what's the time? Should we take a break first before we get into some of this other stuff? Whisper, you're in
charge. Yeah, take a break. Take a break because we still want to hear from Jordan, and he's going to tell us he's 1, 2, 3. He's got to rank Pendlebury, Cochin, and Selwood. Good luck, Geordie.
Kogan credit cards. No annual fees, amazing rewards, and complimentary Kogan First membership.
Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Well, it's a big day today in the world of footy. We wait with great anticipation to see what takes place. The game will go on, of course it is. It's just in what form and whether we can make the adjustment. Tim Watson and Jordan Lewis back in the studio.
Geordie, you've got twins. Can you understand the position that Seb Ross took on his family's behalf?
Yeah, I can. I can understand the decision that anyone who has a child at home and they need to get back to support the child and the partner, absolutely. But when it's twins and having gone through that situation myself, there is no doubt it is amplified from, you know, looking after them, being away, all those things. So I looked at this situation and I just could not believe we were talking about questioning someone that wanted to go home and help their wife through what is a difficult period.
So should supporters, sponsors and members have every right to be disappointed with Seb's decision?
No, and I think as a footballer, at that point in time, you couldn't care less, as harsh as it is, could not care less about anyone else that is impacted by this decision unless your wife is happy and your kids are happy and healthy. So for me, it was a story that shouldn't have got any traction. And I'm sure you guys come across stories throughout your career and you just choose not to go with it. You just, what's the point? There's no winners in this. Let's not question someone about their decision to go home and see family. And it should have been the case in this instance.
Should St Kilda have supported, do you think, both players more publicly than what they did initially?
Yeah, I think we've been heavily criticising Collingwood in some of the decisions and the way that they've played out in the past 6 months. I think St Kilda fit right in that basket at the moment. I thought the way they dealt with this particular instance was wishy-washy. You know, it really was. So for them to come out and say that we debated the decision and we had to come to... What a load of crap.
Yes. How did again, Simon Lethlean, when he spoke to us on the morning, said they support the decision. I think once it became more public on the Monday, we needed to hear from them quickly, sooner than we did. How do the Dogs beat the Cats tonight at GMHBA Stadium?
Tomorrow. This is juicy. Tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow night. So, this is the greatest task, I think, and I think you boys mentioned it before. Geelong are the side that... it feels like Richmond last year or the year before, just timing their run really nicely. So the greatest challenge was last week against Port Adelaide. So the game was in the balance. And then the 7-goal 2 last quarter was unbelievable. And it was just a rocket through their side. So if you're Western Bulldogs tomorrow night, I think... The pressure that you apply further up the field, no doubt, will help the defence. It's one of those things where two sides, if they've got one vulnerability, I think it's defence in both sides. So Western Bulldogs, I think, struggle with quick movement. So if you're Geelong, you're trying to move the ball quite quickly to give your forwards an opportunity, whereas Geelong's vulnerability, I think, is to the more key position players having a hold on their defence. So if you're Western Bulldogs, it's all about pressure. It's all about contest pressure, win the territory battle, and try and limit the amount of times that that Geelong get free transition or flowing transition from your back half to help you help your defenders, because the key forwards in Hawkins, Cameron and Rowan are absolutely dynamic.
Now, we asked you a really tough question this week, and we're going to be doing this each and every week. So we asked you to compare Pendlebury, Cochin and Selwood. Who will finish up out of these three as the better player and captain?
I think Selwood is my gut feel. I just think the body of work, and it's hard when you're splitting hairs against these three, but for me, Selwood to have played in 34 finals, he's a three-time premiership player, six-time All-Australian, which is Pendlebury as well, he's a six-time All-Australian, four times most courageous, three times best and fairest winner, 9 years as captain, and the record in finals in terms of the way that he's been able to play and perform at a high level in finals, for me, probably gets him the edge over the other two. But you could probably make a case for each one of those players. So I don't think it's fair if I sit here and name one. What about you,
no, it's
Tim?
Not. Yeah, it's not fair.
What about you two? Have you got a preferred player over the three?
I'd have to sit down and have a hard think about it because I haven't done that. I wasn't my question,
but
by the way.
But it makes it even more confusing. When I did it last night, I sat down there and I thought, how are you going to differentiate the three players? Is it finals? Is it premierships? Is it Brownlow medals? Is it all Australians?
This is like drip tray type conversation, though, where people sit there and say, who was a better player, Scotty Pendlebury, Trent Cotchin, or Joel Selwood? You look at the body of work between those two players, and then if you want to drill down and talk about premierships, and I mean, Cotchin, his last 6 years, has been unbelievable. The way Brownlow that he's medalist. Turned himself around as a player. Captain, premiership captain, and changed his style of play too. We rarely see somebody go from what he was and turn into what he has become as a player.
Yeah, so for me, he could have had more All-Australians or more individual accolades, but there was a decision made 5-6 years ago, whatever it may have been, to go, I don't care about that. I'm investing in the team. So that's why the three premierships and the three-time premiership captain is an extraordinary effort, because he could have gone the other way and not had that.
And Pendlebury is still playing at such an incredibly high level.
He's still their best player.
He's deep into his career.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it. You know, 2010 Norm Smith medalist, six times All-Australia, three-time Anzac Day medalist.
Impossible. It is an
I'll have all three.
In fact, it's an unfair, impossible question. They're all-time greats, and they'll all be in the Hall of Fame, which says enough. Geordie, we're out of time, but we're going to set you... This is one of the questions we're going to ask you today, but I think I know it'll still be relevant this time next week. What do the Gold Coast Suns stand for? How can they change things? And what should our expectation be of this football club up in Queensland? Does anyone care, I guess, is the basis of that, outside of... Yeah, Tony Cochran and his great group are working their backsides off to try and make it happen, but they have moments, but then they can't sustain them and they drop off, and we don't sort of talk about them that much because they're out of sight. So I want you to spend the week on it and just next week come back and say, here's a blueprint for the Gold Coast for the next few years about how they can become, I guess, more relevant in our competition. It's a tough one for you.
Yeah, no, you're right. I never liked homework as a school student, but hey, I'll come back to you boys with what my thoughts are.
I know you're looking very studious today, though.
Yeah, you're going beautifully. Thanks for joining us, mate.
Good on you, boys.
Thanks, Jordan.
Jordan's always here for Mercedes-Benz. Berwick, pay premium trading prices on all makes and models.